You know what they do? What they do? They push trout season up a month.
I did not expect you to say that.
You know? Yeah. They do stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
crazy stuff.
Oh, crazy, man. Crazy stuff.
You know what?
We don't need to conserve this fishery.
I'm going to fish for trout now, bitch.
Escort mission.
Pring.
That is a sound that headphones make.
Shaka shaka shaka.
Are you talking into the mic? Are we?
Sorry, I wasn't close enough.
Okay,
roll for host.
Wasn't sure.
Oh right, I should grab that.
Is that a six?
That's a nine and a three.
Nine and a three.
16.
Sweet. All right, I win the roll. Welcome everyone to the Escort Mission podcast. I'm Mike, and I'm with your. I'm here, like always, with Josh.
Hello.
And Chaz.
Hello.
Sweet. So let's start this show off right away. And I'm going to start it off with...
Final Four, March Madness.
Yes.
Coming at you. Nothing but. We're going to talk about brackets. We're going to talk about upsets.
We made it through the Ides of the March. So, nothing. We didn't get stabbed in the back, so that's good. I'm going to start off with a meme of the week, actually.
All right.
I saw this a couple days ago and then saw it today and was reminded that I should mention it. There's this blog called Thumbs and Ammo, which is basically scenes from movies and now, because of a Kotaku article, video games, where any gun in the shot is replaced with a thumbs up. And that's it. And
nice.
It's very internet, but...
Just like Photoshop out the gun and try to keep their hand the same.
So there's really, you know, like of like Rambo, you know, looking like really determined with the gun, but instead he's just like thumbs upping really hard.
is this a Tumblr?
It's not Tumblr. It's Blogspot.
It sounds like a Tumblr.
I know, but it's Blogspot of all things.
It could be Blogspot. Okay, I believe that.
So thumbs and ammo.
Do you remember Celebrities Without Eyebrows?
That was horrifying.
That was a good one.
That's one of those things you don't think you need to be okay with looking at other people's faces.
You guys see
you
one
it.
Little hand?
Yes, that one's so good.
I have not seen that, no.
Oh my God, it's so amazing.
They just take pictures of celebrities or whatever, or movie stills, and they Photoshop one of their hands smaller than the other.
Genius. So
they just have
one smaller hand.
Yeah, like somebody will have their arm around somebody else, and then the arm that's like sticking out over the shoulder is just really tiny.
Oh God, just imagine like is it Jay-Z and Beyonce? Like Jay-Z's got his arm around Beyonce, except the hand around her shoulder. It's like that creepy doll hand that Kristen Wiig wears in that one SNL sketch.
Oh God.
Oh yeah, this is funny. Thumbs and Ammo is good. We're looking at a cover of The Transporter, Statham, jumping sideways and kicking.
The thing is that on the surface, it's just silly internet, but it almost feels a little deeper than that.
Yeah, that's great.
Take away the violence, add in positivity.
Garfield
totally
Garfield.
Colors your thoughts of everything. It's pretty cool.
Dig it.
All right. So, Chaz, what's going on with you this week? News-wise?
Not much. Somehow, nothing really happened. I actually literally don't have any news to talk about.
You were
news of the world. I don't have news of the world. I have media and stuff.
You're usually the guy with the tech news.
Do
man.
News or opinions of
nothing
yourself.
The one news thing that I saw was that there's some company out of Florida that seems like they're doing a Vizio type model for cell phones.
Oh, that's needed. I just read an article today about the CEO of some random company who operated for a whole year only using his Galaxy Note phone instead of a computer or tablet or anything. And one of the only things he was missing was some kind of Vizio replacement app. So
he
had to remote desktop.
Wait, Vizio.
We're talking
in...
about I was talking about Vizio as in the TV manufacturer.
That's less cool.
Wait, do you mean the diagramming software?
You're talking about OmniGraffle or
All right.
Okay. No, I wasn't talking about that.
Okay.
No, so Vizio, the TV manufacturer.
I like the manufacturer.
Has a model wherein they're high quality, low cost, no marketing budget. They essentially forego marketing and just do word of mouth.
And they operate in California.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're operating out of the... So anyway, this company's based out of Florida. I don't recall the name, but it just seemed like an interesting model. They basically said, like,
Phone-zio.
Look, if you buy the display from Sharp and the RAM from, you know, whoever makes RAM, like random Crucial. Chip fab somewhere, and you get them from all the OEMs and you piece together a phone, that component cost is the same for Apple and for Samsung and for whoever else. And so if you don't have the other layers of bullshit that, you know, Samsung has, like a huge organization that they have to pay for and executive salaries and marketing budgets and everything else, if you literally just make the phone, then it can be $299. And so their product is going to be, their like flagship that they just announced is essentially a Galaxy S3 class phone in terms of specs and the screen. I think it's literally the same display and all that, and it's $299 unlocked. Like,
so it's pretty cool. A lot like a Nexus 4.
Like a Nexus 4, yeah.
I'm curious how it's different and how it will get software updates.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. But I mean, I like the concept. You know, in concept, that totally. Seems cool, and I'm down with more companies doing that, just putting pressure on the bigger guys.
Yeah.
Totally. That's the only interesting thing. I don't know. What else? Happened?
Reader happened.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or is about to not happen.
Google Reader is dying.
July 1st.
Giving up on them like Wave and Orkut. Or I don't know.
Oh, Orkut has not been given up. It has been subsumed by Brazil. By Brazil, dude.
That's right. That's right. I forgot. That one lives in Brazil.
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever else Google has gotten rid of. A lot of other things.
Yeah, lots of stuff. It's interesting because they kind of...
CalDAV is going away.
Make products out of lots of things that they can think of, and then they kind of slap the label beta on everything, and then lots of stuff goes away. And some of the stuff is really beloved by, you know, maybe a small number of people, and others of it is just like nobody really used. And I was a big user of Google Notebook, actually, and that
I don't even know that one.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, and the response from the internet, I mean, sure, maybe it's kind of an echo chamber, but it feels like there are a lot of loud supporters of Google Reader.
Definitely like the highest profile.
Like more than you might have thought.
Maybe not the highest profile. Maybe Wave was the highest profile. But like most,
I think that was the most ambitious.
And most beloved.
Wave was like, this is going to like take over email and web conferencing and chat. And
are there a lot of alternatives for Wave? Because I mean, although
well, all of its component technologies, basically.
You know, Gmail.
No,
that's the
thing.
I
mean, like, really equivalent alternatives.
The number one alternative to Wave is Gmail.
That's not even close to the same thing, though. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right. Like, Google Reader is the number one competitor.
Google Reader, like, as much as I love it and I was disappointed by the news, I kind of saw it coming, and there are a million alternatives that, if are not, like, equivalent, they might be better.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it took me about a day of whining and research to decide that Feedly is essentially better.
Life was going to go on.
And, yeah, life will move on.
Plus one to Feedly.
You know, even though they gave the 3-month notice or whatever for Reader going away, most of us are already switched to Feeder within a day or two or a weekend, right?
Yeah.
And the one theory I heard, I think it was Ars Technica article, they predicted that Google is going to integrate RSS feeds into Google Plus, which they have not done yet. Mm. And everyone thought maybe they would have done by now, the way that, like, when they first launched Google Plus, there were those, like, search for news type of feed, you know, situations happening in Google Plus that were not as fully featured as Google Reader for just like pulling in your news feeds or whatever. But maybe they would integrate that stuff. Ars Technica thinks they still are within the next couple months before, like right before they kill Reader, they're going to throw all that shit into Google Plus or something. But I think it's too late. I think they just lost everyone to Feedly, et cetera.
Right.
There are all those articles about 500,000 people joining Feedly this week.
Although that's curious. I mean, if they do bring it back to Google Plus, would you switch?
Just to stay in the Google culture. I would try it again.
Yeah, I definitely would be okay with that as long as it was implemented all right.
Yeah.
I mean,
because Feedly doesn't have like a built-in sharing. All its links are like share via external social network you already have, and I'm not sure I want to share on any of them. But I would like to go back to what we had like 2 years ago, which was like 15 people.
Right.
That we were all in like a Google Reader friends list that we would all share to each other. Right. You know, but which I could theoretically do with Google Plus.
Yeah, just add them to a circle,
but
and share to that circle. Just,
like, less manageable. I don't know. It's supposed to be more manageable, but it seems less.
It's more full. It's got more features, so it's less obvious how to do that one specific thing.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a little harder.
Yeah, it's very weird how the Google Reader like social network kind of organically was created. I don't think they really tried to make it, but it formed, and we all used it, and we all loved it. And then when they took it away and moved it to Google Plus, which basically killed it because no one freaking uses Google Plus, which. I mean, come on, you don't even get a Google Plus / your username URL yet. I mean, you have to be like a huge business with a lot of visibility to even like get that. I'm still profile random, you know, alphanumeric string, which is, well, it's just, I mean, that's not inviting. That's not something you put on a business card.
It doesn't
feel social.
That's
not something you share with other people. It's vanity-wise, it's horrible. I mean, come on.
Like, yeah,
what other social network
anti-social.
Does that?
We rail on Nintendo for doing the same thing.
Yeah, it's a friend code, essentially.
Yeah, but it's just in the URL. But yeah, I see your point as far as business cards and such.
I'm just surprised that they still haven't changed that after. I mean, if they really want people to use it, why the hell don't they do
that?
Well,
let me tell you, Android wants you to use the shit out of Google Plus. Like, literally every photo I take is immediately uploaded to Google Plus.
Yeah, well,
and
mine
then
is too.
I am sent an email. What?
Yeah, I mean, well, because the Google Plus app automatically uploads stuff to your Picasa,
like every photo you take.
Yeah. I mean, you can turn it off, but yeah, it allows you to do that.
Yeah, that's weird. I would not have that turned on if I did not have the option.
I mean, it's just like iCloud. It's just like PhotoStream.
You do have the option to not do that.
Okay, I'm gonna turn that off.
You can turn it off. That is the only feature of Google Plus I consistently use right now.
Really?
I turned it on as soon as
I
heard about it. But I don't share all the pictures. Like,
right?
All,
yeah.
They just exist in my own personal Google Plus picture cloud.
Right. But
which
that also
I use
means
like Picasa for myself.
That you have to manage that, and I take like 40 pictures of something happening with my kid, right? So I take like 40 pictures of him running down the street, and then two of them will be good, and I want to delete the rest. And I have to delete them in two places because they're on my phone and they're in Google Plus.
Well, you don't have to. And it might synchronize your deletes.
No, that's dumb.
Well, if you have infinite cloud space, why would you ever delete anything?
Because,
like, maybe you'll want to go back and you'll say, this one photo I took on you know, April.
Yeah, you need to let go, Chaz. Like, I think you're over managing. Just let it do it, and then you always have everything you would ever need.
20 years from now, when Charlie is like an aspiring actor, and you know, and they're like, we need some baby photos, and you're like, here's a great one from April 2nd. You know, 2013.
Yeah, but they're not great ones. Like, I'm erasing the ones.
No, I'm
that
the
are,
one
like,
you
overexposed.
What I'm saying is,
shitty.
The one you kept is the great one.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, "This is so good. If we had 15 others almost exactly like it, like that would help us Photoshop the shit out of this business."
No, that's a pain in the ass.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you can turn it off,
or just maybe it synchronizes deletes.
It doesn't. You have to do it.
Maybe you could make it synchronize deletes.
Maybe.
Maybe you could ask for them for a feature request.
Maybe, but I still don't want to do it. I still, like, that's the other thing, is, like, I take pictures of stuff. Like, if I take a picture of notes, like a bunch of work notes, or a work board, it's potentially a security risk, right?
Yeah, you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah, so there's, like, a big whiteboard, and
but
we need
like,
to take a picture of it.
But, like, your work is not supposed to let you take a picture of that with your phone.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
It'd
like
be against company policy.
Immediately it goes up to the cloud, and sure, I can delete it out, but everything lives forever on the internet, and I don't have any real guarantee that Google isn't keeping all that stuff up there anyway, you know, and just telling me that it's deleted.
That's true, so turn it off.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a good reason to turn it off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you take a lot of naked boob shots, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I can't sext
crotch
with this feature.
Yeah,
now. This
yeah,
is true.
A lot of shots of your briefs that you text to staffers.
Right.
Yeah, that's what's happening here.
Account.
That's what Charles is worried about. Sexting to staffers.
Did you guys see the Mark Burnett Obama Satan thing?
Wow, that was a lot of concepts in one sentence.
I don't know who Mark Burnett is.
Burnett is the guy who
TV producer
who produced the Donald Trump show, The Apprentice, and Survivor.
Oh, no wonder I don't know who he is.
Massively ultra rich guy.
I don't give a shit about those.
Yeah. And he just produced with his wife, Laura Downey, the Touched by an Angel person, Maura Downey. Anyway, he and his wife just produced the miniseries called The Bible, which is airing on the History Channel.
Oh, I heard something about that.
Yeah, so it's sort of the Bible as literature, or no, I mean, it's the biblical stories, but it's just a TV, like a dramatized TV version of them. And there was some minor flack about that the actor that they got to play Obama, that they got to play Satan, looks like Obama. Like, I don't think I necessarily would have noticed it had I just been watching it. Uh-huh. But if you see that there's, you know, the side-by-side comparison shot on the internet, and it's like, oh yeah, there's actually kind of a striking resemblance between that. And so the blogosphere erupted into, like, semi-outrage, also kind of anti-outrage, like, what are you being outraged about, oh, et cetera.
It came full circle within an hour.
Did they have a black actor play Satan?
Yeah. I mean, that in and of itself is problematic.
Seems like a bad move in itself, right?
It sure does.
Like, why isn't
it's a dark-skinned guy.
Why isn't his skin, like, bright red or something? You know?
I mean, it's not dramatized.
Yeah, why isn't he wearing red face?
If it's realistic,
then why is any
same
color as Jesus?
That's assuming who is
obviously not white, and I'm sure they chose for Jesus to be white in that piece of shit.
Yeah. He's a Satan's a fallen angel.
I don't have
any
respect for the History Channel.
Yeah, the History Channel's redonk. Fucking ancient aliens.
Yeah, it didn't used to be though. What happened?
They're on 7 seasons of Ancient Aliens. Man. Dude, my barber was telling me, my barber who I love and who does an awesome hot towel shave, and you should totally check out The Urban Shave, is super into that stuff.
Sponsoring the show this week.
Oh my gosh. He loves Ancient Aliens so much.
Does he do the thing where he's like, did you know that?
He was telling me about that.
Did you hear that? Like, he's about to speak facts that he heard on this.
I say this out of love, David, in case you're listening. take this in the spirit in which it's intended, but I am a skeptic about that sort of thing. And I do not believe that the pyramids were an ancient power source. Like, you know, well, apparently on Ancient Aliens, they went into the pyramids and they like scraped the walls in different chambers and like this chemical compound is on the walls in this one and this other chemical compound is on the walls in this one. When you put them together, that makes energy and therefore they were nuclear reactors. I'm like, I don't think that's how it works.
You can't see me, listener, but my brow has furrowed.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. That's just like, it seems probably not, the Satan thing seems almost definitely to have been accidental. And yet it's just an example of how even accidental stuff can get blown totally out of proportion. You have to be so ultra careful in the age of continual connectivity.
And the immediate feedback of
the super immediate
vocal
feedback.
Minority on the internet. Yeah. That's tough.
Yeah.
But that miniseries is getting huge ratings. It's getting ratings bigger than any cable program.
Bigger than Jesus?
Bigger than any cable program ever. Literally, it's like the Bible miniseries. It got 13 million viewers, which is bigger than network shows.
And Catholics are increasing their population steadily, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it feels like...
They like to have sex without protection, I hear. Thus increasing their numbers.
This is true.
It feels like that could increase their numbers. A trend. Like, it's like, oh, shit, that's super successful. Like, you know, let's go to the middle instead of trying to do really edgy but high-quality Mad Men. Like, there can only be so many Mad Men's and Games of Thrones. You know,
History is doing a Game of Thrones too. It's called Vikings.
Oh yeah.
That's on the History Channel.
It's
right?
It's pretty terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, somebody told
shouldn't
me.
Shouldn't it just be called Not History? Like, it should just be called Fiction at that point, shouldn't it?
Well,
or
it's attempted historical fiction.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
History-esque, history related channel.
It ends up just being like low budget Game of Thrones. Anyway.
Anything else, Josh?
Want me to continue? News? All right. Yeah, Pocket Casts is the new best podcast app on Android. It's fucking
Wasn't
rad.
Wasn't it new last week, too?
Did I mention it last
week?
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
It's still
moving
good,
on.
I started using it. It's designed very well. It has a couple features that are a little weird, and it's missing a like three-screen tutorial to tell you how to get started. But once you figure it out, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I think it's almost flawless. I think those two flaws you should suggest as features.
Yeah.
And then they'll probably add them because they're responsive.
UX is excellent. UI is very good.
Yeah. I am about to finish my first free month of Netflix discs. I got through 19 movies in 30 days.
Nice. Good on you.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good, right?
Yeah, that's a lot of movie
watching.
Pretty good.
That's $1 each.
You are a cinephile
actually,
now.
That's... $0.
You got your money's worth from your free month.
You did way to use your subscription effectively.
Are you going to cancel it and not continue?
I'm gonna pay for at least one more month. I looked at my next 30 or 20 and I'm like, yeah, I want to see those. But I'll probably move on to games pretty seriously pretty soon, and then end up having a month or two where I watched zero and all the discs sat on my shelf and I regretted not canceling sooner.
Well, that's the American way.
That's
man.
The thing.
That'll
man.
Happen.
It's going to come back around.
Like, I know.
They're like, oh, you're using it now. Just wait.
That's why I had to take advantage of this month as much as possible so that when I have those inevitable months when I don't use it at all,
yeah,
it'll make up for it.
Nice.
Did you guys see the Saints Row 4 announcement?
No.
Saints Row 4.
It was announced.
August 20th.
Wait, who bought Saints Row?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, I didn't even pay attention to that.
Because it all got
that's an excellent auctioned question.
Off. Oh, really?
Oh, it all was the THQ stuff got auctioned off.
That's an excellent question.
So whoever bought Volition.
Anyway,
basically.
Whoever is doing that just released a teaser trailer with lots of game footage for a teaser. Tons of game footage, just like shot of all these unbelievably ridiculous things in the game. That game is so batshit.
Saying something.
If you looked at 3 and thought this is going in the wrong direction compared to 2, you are gonna be disappointed because they went 100 times further in that direction. Oh my god, you have to watch that.
Well, it's
that
maybe
teaser.
I'll like it. Maybe they'll go far enough.
Yeah,
I don't know. You tell me. It's going to be out in August, apparently, which is
wow.
really soon.
Yeah, it's almost like they were working on it before they finished the third one.
I don't know how to bring this up, but I'm going to have
words.
To like
use your words.
Skip into a movie in order to bring this up, which is Forks Over Knives. Have you heard of this?
Mm-mm.
This is a documentary on Netflix, streaming, that is basically pro-vegetarianism, potentially veganism, but they don't call it that because they want it to seem more welcoming, I guess.
Labels are loaded.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't want it to be loaded. They just wanted
like
to, like,
baked potato.
Present evidence and stuff. It's mostly, like...
But no butter on it.
It's
wait, it has
if you're,
to have butter
if you're
if
vegan.
It's loaded.
If you're vegan, though. Sorry.
It's mostly one of these documentaries that just, like, pounds out the scientific evidence, you know, for an hour and a half,
yeah,
interspersed with a handful of personal accounts, you know, some people that they follow that change their diet and get healthier or whatever, and then show you a bunch of historical data, all these different research things, and then talk to a bunch of different experts and doctors and blah blah blah. And it's really convincing initially when you watch it, like if you you know, are a believing person.
Yeah.
I don't want to say gullible, that's a little too rude, you know,
if you're easily swayed.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it and was like, yeah, that's relatively convincing. And they don't do the dick move of like Food Inc., etc., of like showing pigs get crushed or whatever,
right.
You know, they just so that it's not all about ethics or whatever, it's mostly just about health, trying to prove that it's basically unhealthy to eat meat. And they seem to make a good case, and they show that you know, a lot of healthy people that are vegetarian or vegan or whatever, right? They call it whole foods, plants-based diet, unprocessed, you know, et cetera.
Raw as possible.
And there were a lot of good messages in the film that I agreed with. Anyone with a head on their shoulders, I think, would agree with a lot of it, but... There were several problems I had with it. Particularly, like, a correlation does not equal causation. Like, you know, fuzziness.
Uh-huh.
You know, they spend some time talking about how bad the typical American diet is and how, you know, we have high cancer rates, and everywhere that they adopt the American diet, like, their cancer rates go up and stuff. Mm-hmm. And all kinds of international cancer rates. And, you know, there's, like, meat and cheese are not the only thing in the unhealthy American diet. You know what I mean? Like, they mix those two up. They say American diet is unhealthy, and then all of that to blame is meat and cheese. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I found an article by just Googling very quickly, like, the name of the film and the word study to look up, like, what studies reference in it. and found this absurdly in-depth article that that debunks basically all the science in the whole film. Basically, they are
ouch,
tweaking the charts and graphs and numbers and study results to be really, really misleading. And it's kind of disappointing because there are a lot of good messages in the film.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I was told to watch it because my mom might be becoming vegan right now. Wow. Essentially, she's like on that track.
Yeah.
And my brother-in-law actually previously tried eating vegetarian for a few months to see if it would lower his cholesterol. His cholesterol actually went up when he went vegetarian for a couple months.
Really?
Isn't that weird? Because he ate relatively healthy before, you know, and he works out a lot. So I don't know exactly why that happened for him, but everybody's a little bit different. Different things work for different people. And I'm not criticizing anyone that wants to be vegan, but I was not sold by the movie in the end.
Disappointing.
I was really disappointed and irritated by it.
When documentaries do that, it's disappointing. Like,
yeah, but man, so many do.
Yep. A good one along those lines is Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead, which
that
I think
sounds uplifting.
Is,
yeah, I heard of that one.
That one's quite good and very compelling in terms of what it asks you to do, which is not a lot. It's basically the guy who's doing it essentially does a juice fast, and it totally made me buy. I literally bought a juicer while watching the movie, so it's very convincing doing that. But it's not like
Amazon.
You can do the whole thing with I'll totally link my juicer. My juicer's a shit, and I did buy it through Amazon
and buy it through our Amazon link.
I'll link it on the show notes if I do show notes. I'm still a week behind on show notes, but yeah, no, the juice fasts are apparently pretty damn good, but. I don't obviously do like a juice cleanse 60-day fast thing. I just have a juicer and use it, and it's awesome. It's totally great. I like kind of hate vegetables and don't want to eat them ever. And so this is a really good way to do it because you can essentially just like juice a million vegetables and chug it. And like you can basically chug whatever you need to, right? Like you can get through 16 ounces of juice. Kind of no problem. And you can make it really good if you give yourself a bunch of, fruits in there as well. But I basically do a purely vegetable juice blend.
Which vegetables do you use? I'm curious. Or what have
you
used?
So I do, my go-to juice is one bunch of kale. Just go to the supermarket, get the organic, whatever. So bunch of kale, bunch of spinach, a whole head of celery, one bunch of celery, parsley, a cucumber, like 4 carrots, and then I do like 2 apples for sweetness and a little thing of like a half inch of ginger root. That's it. And it's like pretty palatable.
How much juice does that make?
It makes quite a bit. It probably makes like I don't know, 100 ounces or something. It makes a lot. It makes like a carafe's worth.
So then you...
And I just put that in
a cup of that a day for a while.
Yeah, like a big cup. Yeah, I drink it. Charlie actually likes it. He likes it pretty well, and he loves to make it. Like, we go to the store and get all the ingredients and buzz it up in the juicer, and it's, like, fun to do.
Yeah, blenders are fun.
Yeah.
That is like a brilliant way to, like, get kids, maybe, to eat a bunch of vegetables they might be avoiding.
Because he does not eat any vegetables. Oh, my God.
Like a kid. Yeah?
Like
his old man.
Nothing. Occasionally, like a slice of apple.
Wow.
That's it. Nothing.
Which is technically not even a vegetable.
Yes.
Yeah. So he still doesn't eat vegetables.
Yeah.
Wow.
We were at a party the other day, and he ate a carrot, like just totally on his own, went over to a bowl of carrots and picked one up and ate it. And Jessica and I were just like watching him independently from across the room. We were just like staring at each other, mouths open, like just agape, aghast or whatever.
Agog, maybe?
Agog, yeah, all of those things. It's like, oh my God. It was one of those, those carrots that come in a bag? So they're
like
2 inches long, and it's basically a bullet. Like they've smoothed out the thing and just like a carrot lozenge, like hardly a carrot anymore at all. But he just like picked one of those up and ate it.
Did you ask him about it later? Like why he ate it?
We tried to get him to eat more, and he was like, no, I'm not having that.
Wow. He just had like a mental
breakdown.
But
he just ate it, yeah. It was crazy.
That's awesome.
Wow. How about you, Mike?
Did you guys ever watch Veronica Mars?
Nope.
Yeah.
TV show?
I watched the first season, I think.
So it's a good show. It's a pretty good show, but it ended like after three seasons, so it kind of became a cult hit. I don't think it was super popular ratings-wise when it was on, probably why it only went three seasons. But randomly, all the stars of the show and the writer-director guy started a Kickstarter for a movie, and it made $2 million in a day, which is, I think, the new record, at least for movies on Kickstarter.
What was their goal?
To make a movie.
No.
I think their goal was like $1.5 million or something.
Okay, cool. So it already passed it.
Yeah, so they made all the money and some in a day, and mm-hmm. so that's going to happen now. And so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I saw it when it was...
I'm looking forward to that.
When it was announced, and I really liked
The video they did?
No, what do you call the reaching goals, whatever the...
Stretch goals. Yeah.
Their stretch goals were like, you know, summarized like, if we make this movie for $1.5 million, it will involve a lot of talking. You know,
A
lot of harsh speaking to each other. And if we make it for $5 million, we'll have a cool fight scene. And if we make it for $20 million, I don't know, we'll do it in space.
Yeah, if their Kickstarter, you know, teaser video to get you interested in it was really good, but if you didn't watch the show, you know, it wouldn't be nearly as heartwarming. But because I watched the whole show, the video was excellent, and it was like coming back home and seeing a bunch of old friends, and mm-hmm. they seemed just as funny and just as into the material mm-hmm. as if it never stopped. So like, I didn't really care whether they ever made a movie, but now that they're making one and it happened so quickly and there's all this buzz, now I'm pretty hyped about that.
Yeah, is the intention to do a theatrical release of this, or are they just going to be like,
I don't know,
you know, digital distribution? And
I don't even remember. I think even to get like a copy of the video, you had to pay like something way higher than a normal video, like $50 or $60.
Oh, so if you're in for 20, you get like a rental or something?
I don't even think you get a rental.
Oh, really?
I don't remember what the goals were. I mean, I didn't actually...
Oh, you didn't fund it?
I didn't fund it. I was just like, oh, hey, that's cool. They're making a movie. And it got funded in a day. That's sweet.
I think it's intended for indie theatrical release.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Which is probably their demographic and their audience anyway.
Since you brought up a Kickstarter, I want to bring up another Kickstarter, which is Project sure. Piola, which I really want people to know about because I want my damn shoes. I want them to make it.
Are they not close to reaching?
They've made about
yet?
10% of what they want. They want mm-hmm. they want $60,000
in a couple of days.
$6,500 in a couple of days.
Ooh.
So it's like not an
Insta-funded,
like, ready to go.
It seems really put together, though. I mean,
yeah.
So what it seems like
one that should have a following.
And should be able to make it. I have decent hopes that they'll get there, but it's probably one of the ones that's going to, like, take the full 30 days to get there, but just get over the edge. So it's a couple guys who were doing... they were living in Costa Rica as part of a sort of not exactly... What's the Peace Corps? Not the Peace Corps,
right.
But like the Peace Corps, some Peace Corps-esque, you know, mission type thing. And they, so a lot of natural rubber gets made in Costa Rica. And so they developed essentially a fair trade system to get rubber, to like pay local farmers to get rubber and develop it in a sustainable way and not cut the trees down for timber and whatever else. And also sourcing cotton, organically grown fair trade cotton, also from Costa Rica. And, you know, they're sourcing like fair trade leather from somewhere else, and they're pulling it together to make some really good looking shoes, basically. So there's a pretty sweet Kickstarter for some awesome shoes
there.
And everyone should go fund that because I want my shoes.
Yeah, the cheapest shoes look pretty rad and really well put together, and they're $50. And if you have money, like, there are a bunch of fancy designs that look either really slick or really crazy for like up to $250.
Yeah.
But yeah, the first day when you linked it.
It was the
lowest numbers of supporters I'd ever seen on a Kickstarter, because I'm not usually in on the ground floor, like on the first couple hours.
So I actually knew that this was coming and had it bookmarked.
Oh, wow.
On some design blog that I read, apparently they linked to it, and I'm like, I went there and I couldn't figure out what was going on with the page.
Oh, it wasn't up yet.
There's like a preview page, so it'll show most of the details about the project, but it just isn't active. Mm-hmm. They haven't clicked go yet, so you can get like early buzz by directing people to the page. But
yes, Cyanide and Happiness were posting on their blog about their Kickstarter for their video series
mm-hmm.
like months before it went up.
Yeah.
They were prepping their audience for it.
I'm psyched about the whole Kickstarter thing. Like, it's so cool. I really like the idea that you can fund a whole movie. Like, you can, because the previously a community around Veronica Mars. I mean, I think they did this, right? They did the Mars Bars thing to try to save the show. They all sent mm-hmm. Mars Bars to the studio.
Right.
And if you have enough community around a project, you can get your shit made. Like, all the stuff that we always wanted to see more of, if there are enough people like you, it can happen.
Yeah,
it's just really cool.
They just needed, you know, the infrastructure to make it easy yeah. to have you shut up and take my money, yep. essentially. That's yep. what it is. That's cool. Also, I'm still taking that Coursera course, Intro to Music Production. It's in week 3 now. For my week 2 assignment, I did something I'd never done before. I actually made a screencast, which is basically just, you know, recording what's on your screen. It was a simple audio lesson, and that was interesting because I've never tried to do something like that, you know, write out a script and actually, like, and it had to be, you know, a certain amount of time, so mm-hmm. I had to think about what I was going to say. Like, I felt like I was in actual school. It's been so long since I've had to, like, do a project like that, and I literally ended up doing it, like, a dozen times before I actually got it.
Oh, Jesus.
At the right amount of time, and I said everything I needed to say, and nothing fucked up while I was doing it, because I didn't want to have to edit it together, because I was using basically free screen
yeah.
recording software, and, you know, it wasn't super, you know... I don't know. Everything, just like with a music recording, usually sounds better if you get it right at the source, meaning you just do the performance perfectly rather than doing 12 bits of it and then trying to edit together, yeah. and it never, like, seems as organic. So, and in doing that, I also used a lavalier mic. I got 4 of them for Christmas that I was thinking about using for us to do portable recording, but I'd never actually used it for any project. Uh-huh. So I actually got to use that, and that was really helpful rather than having
plug
to, like,
it into?
Well, I should have plugged into the audio interface that we had, because, you know, the level that comes out of that mic is really low and it's not at line level. So, but I was being lazy, and by the time at the end, I didn't feel like doing it again right. So I just plugged it straight into the computer, mm-hmm. which means that it was a low level, and, you know, I was able to boost it a little, but it was still pretty quiet on the actual recording, and the free software I had only output 480p to YouTube. So even though I have a 16:9 formatted screen, it didn't look great on YouTube. But, you know, there's 50,000 projects. We're peer reviewing each other. I'm not too worried about being perfect.
Can we link it on YouTube?
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's, cool. It's unlisted, but I could give you the actual link to it. So,
interesting.
So that was fun. Yeah, I just did a short lesson about recording MIDI into a sequencer. And
yeah, cool. I want to watch it.
Played a little thing. So I watched some stuff on TV and movies. So let's move into... Let's move into media. I'm not sure, Josh, if the 80-some movies you've seen lately, this was one of them, but I finally saw Wreck-It Ralph.
I haven't seen it yet. I want to see it.
Me either. I want
to. So, it was good. It was good. I enjoyed it. The first half was pretty good for if you're a video game geek, like just spotting the references, and it's very clever the way they, you know, show what it looks like to be inside an arcade machine and all the games interacting with each other. So that was cool. I would recommend that. I guess I'd give it a 4 on Netflix. I also watched a short half-an-hour documentary on YouTube that I had saved for months and just finally got back to, called What the Future Sounded Like, which is this... I don't know when it was... I think it was made about 7 years ago, and it's a documentary about the birth of electronic music in Britain. And they talk to a few of the guys that are involved with, you know, basically making the first... electronic music, you know, making these huge machines. You know, they were kind of half composer, half engineer, mm-hmm. and the very first, like, consumer level synthesizer was the VCS3, which actually went out to market, and lots of bands of the time, like, I think it came out in either the late 60s, the early 70s, you know, bands like Pink Floyd, you know, like, really used on, like, Dark Side of the Moon.
These
to
like
make
analog,
a lot of
their... analog synthesizers.
Yeah, it was this, you know, kind of huge console with, like, a bunch of knobs and buttons, and then another one here, and it had a little pegboard where you could actually, like, put a peg into, like, a grid, and that would change the kind of sound that came out of it.
Science.
Yeah.
Industry and technology.
It definitely looked 3M. Like something Thomas Dolby, you know, would use on stage or something, but
cool.
It was really cool because they talked to, like, 3 guys that I had never heard of. I mean, you know, I've read up on music and electronic music, but I'd never heard of these guys, and it was really interesting to see that they were just kind of like nutty professor type dudes, like in a, you know, a room in their backyard that they had built, like a shed or something, and they just have a bunch of electronics, and they're just messing around with it, making bleeps and bloops. They talked about this one concert where they literally had a computer on stage, and people came like in an auditorium, like a regular concert, and they said, "All right, we're gonna hit go, and this machine is gonna like play, you know, a concerto for you." And uh-huh. the people are just sitting in the audience, and they're literally hearing stuff like bleep bloop bloop blah, tiki tiki bloop bleep bloop bloop. And they sat and listened to that for like an hour and a half, and that was like a legit thing. And I'm, you know, it was weird how avant-garde that sounded then. Right. I could tell why it was hard to take that seriously until it turned into like the 80s dance music craze, you know, or the prog rock craze, you know, like keyboard mm-hmm. stuff in the 70s. You know, it was pretty whack to think they were trying to push that as legitimate music at that time. But so that was really cool. I recommend that.
Awesome.
I watched the first episode of House of Cards, finally.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Kevin Spacey's the man. He's pretty much owning that role as hard as he possibly can. So, I'm halfway through the second episode. I'm pretty sure I will keep watching that. And in shame ovision, I started watching, because of Robin, an ABC Family show called Switched at Birth, which is on Netflix, second season on right now. Two interesting things about the show. Yeah, it's very soapy. It's exactly what you think. ABC Family, everybody's overdramatic, and all the storylines are, you know, silly. But the basic story is that these two girls, they're like teenage girls, they learned that they were
switched. Let me guess, were not switched at birth.
Oh! No, actually they were.
Well, they are switched.
It's not called Not Switched at Birth. Mm. Yeah, they were switched at birth.
I feel like I could have predicted that.
And now they have to figure out, they meet, you know, their real families and how they deal with that situation, which is actually kind of interesting. I mean, it's more complex than most silly, soapy sitcoms.
Yeah. Well, it's ABC Family, so it's supposed to have a, you know, touching and heartfelt message. Well,
and also, one of the daughters is deaf, and so they have a couple deaf people on the show, and I would say at least 60 to 70% of the conversations on the show are signed, which is really cool. And recently, they did an all ASL episode where there was literally no talking parts, and everybody just signed with subtitles throughout the entire episode, which I haven't seen yet, but I'm really curious because I really like ASL, and Robin actually took classes in the past and knows some, and I don't know. I find it a really interesting language. Yeah. And it kind of makes me like want to learn, and watching people have an argument in ASL is like way more interesting than people yelling. Maybe just because obviously I'm a hearing person and it's just something I don't see a lot. But there's several arguments in the show where they're just like signing the shit at each other, mm-hmm. and I don't know. It's really engaging to watch that, mainly because I don't sign and it's all new to me. So it's kind of cool.
Most interesting things I ever learned, and a thing that I love, is how poetry works in sign language. Mm-hmm. And it's essentially like, how does something rhyme in a language that isn't spoken, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the way it works is if there's a sign that naturally begins with your hand in the same position that another sign ends, then those are considered to be rhymes. So your hand, you can essentially flow from one word to the next. Mm-hmm. That's considered lyrical or poetic. And that's what a poem in sign language is like essentially a construction of signs that all flow and like loop into one another. That's super cool. Fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. It also reminded me of a documentary I watched called The Sound and Fury, which is a documentary on the deaf community and how there's kind of a schism between little d deaf and big d deaf. Whereas the big D deaf community is like, you know, this is not a handicap. Like, there's nothing wrong with me. They're often against like the cochlear implant.
Yes.
You know, they don't see being deaf as something wrong or bad that needs to be fixed, and they see a deaf person who would go down that route acting like it was as a bad thing. And there's quite, even today, a fervent like argument between people who want to fix it and people who are like, I'm not broken. And I don't know, that also seems really interesting. And they get into that a little bit in the show, because there is a couple characters that are, you know, I really hate hearing people sometimes, are like, why would you even think about, you know, associating with hearing people or getting a cochlear implant, or, you know, like, why are you ashamed of yourself or something like that, which I can't think of a lot of other, you know, commonly understood disabilities that have a community like that. Like, I don't know if people who are in wheelchairs, there's little W wheelchair and big W wheelchair, where they would never think of, like, if there was a cure that they could walk again, they would say, ah, F that. This is who I am. I want to be in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
I don't know if that exists. Maybe it does, but the deaf community definitely has
that. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't, if there were truly a fix, a simple fix, like if there were something where you could take a pill and it would literally then cause you to hear, I think you'd, I could be totally wrong about this. My assumption is that many people, even those who had said, I don't want, like, I'd want to be this way, would take that pill. Like, I think there are, it's tough to say. This is just my thought.
Charles,
about it.
You need to go and watch the X-Men movies.
Really?
Because they totally want to cure that mutantism.
They wrestle with this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the government wants to, like, spread the cure.
Right, they, but that's removing capabilities. This would be like adding,
not necessarily, because some of them are like discoloration of the skin, you know, like blue bumpy skin. You know,
yeah.
Is that how that person was intended to look, or were they supposed to have?
No, I get you. It's smooth. An interesting thing to think about, but it's I think a lot of people would say that because the cures, quote-unquote, like a cochlear implant, etc., are fairly piecemeal and rudimentary and not really like a total cure.
Yeah.
Right.
They don't hear. You don't hear like we hear, right, with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
they're expensive and, you know, sometimes painful. It's a surgery to get
them. And sometimes, like, it can make your hearing even worse.
Yeah, so it's not.
Yeah.
But if there literally were a cure that could instantly cause you to hear, like if there were a bunch of people who are telepathic and I wasn't, and then there was something that could make me telepathic, I would probably fucking take that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if there were some other sense.
I don't have a problem with the people that...
It's interesting.
...that think that they don't have a disability and they're fine. That's cool to me. And then the people who want to get experimental surgeries to try to gain hearing that maybe they weren't born with, or regain some that they lost, that's totally cool too. What pisses me off is when people judge other people for their own decision that they should have the right to make, you know?
Right.
So if anybody gives somebody crap for
either
doing the surgery or for not doing the surgery, then, you know, that person's a dick.
Yeah, it's interesting discussion.
The way that you stand on the fence is totally dickish behavior.
I know.
You should quit it with that.
Fence standers are dicks.
All right, Josh, what about you? Did you watch any TVs?
I got a couple movies. Okay. I told you Forks Over Knives, 2 stars. Sorry.
Debunked.
Okay.
Busted.
I think 5 stars to Up in the Air.
Yeah, that was a good movie. I liked it.
I really liked that. I really liked it. Yeah, George Clooney, he flies a lot, and I don't know, it's just a kind of a poignant,
it's a woman stuff happens.
Poignant drama and relationship stuff and whatever. It's a good movie. 4 stars, Sherlock Holmes, Game of Shadows.
Is that the sequel to the Downey Jr.?
It is the sequel. Maybe it's 3. It is just an action-packed blast. It's kind of dumb, but it's pretty cool. Man, they do the weird slow-mo fight thing,
right,
like that I made fun of in Premium Rush, but they do it in a really cool way.
He's like analyzing every move that
he's
about
predicting
to make.
Things. And they, yeah. I love...
that's because he's not on a bike, right? The bike automatically kind of lowers your legitimacy.
Yes. It's also, it's just really well edited, you know? And I don't know if this is too much of a spoiler, so pause for 5 seconds. They have a prediction fight-off where, like, he fights somebody who also can predict, and they, like, they show you the prediction.
Moriarty?
Prediction, and it's pretty rad.
It's got to be Moriarty.
Someone,
right?
Else.
Okay. Midnight in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was good.
Woody Allen.
Yep.
Owen Wilson. Rachel McAdams. I really liked it. 4 stars. I don't know if I usually like Woody Allen movies.
Oh, I love Woody Allen.
It's the only Woody Allen I've ever seen.
I haven't seen a lot of them.
Oh, man. You guys should watch. Let me tell you the ones you should watch. You should watch.
Annie Hall?
No.
No?
Annie Hall. I mean, it's good.
That's the classic one I always hear.
Yeah, Annie Hall, Manhattan. Those are good. Yeah. Joke for Joke. I can never remember. It's Crimes and Misdemeanors. joke for joke, one of the funniest movies ever written. Really, really hilarious, funny movie. Definitely cool. Watch that one. Another one that's sort of not really well-liked by Woody Allen fans is Deconstructing Harry. It's one of the more modern ones, but I like it a lot. It's a good one.
Cool. All right, I'll list those. The Men Who Stare at Goats.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it.
Yeah, that was okay.
Did they stare at goats? Did goat staring occur?
A little bit. Okay. A little bit. Not too much.
Okay.
Just a tiny bit.
All right.
On the Beach. This is a 1959 or 63. I forget which. This is like a classic nuclear post-apocalyptic movie with Gregory Peck and Ava Gardner and some other folks. And the gist is the movie starts with almost everyone in the world just died from some like World War nuclear holocaust. And somehow like Australia avoided all of it. And like the only people left alive are basically in Australia. And
so it's a prequel to Mad Max.
And they're basically just they're just waiting to die because the nuclear winds are going to get there in a couple months or something. Right. And they know they're going to die. It's inevitable. And yet, so this is kind of, it reminded me of like Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, which I really liked, or a million other post-apocalyptic Mad Max-y type things. Except, I don't know if it was just because it was made in the 50s or whatever, but everyone is so like polite and put together for the whole thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. It is not like
bother. Chaos. We're going to die.
Yeah, it is not chaos. Everybody's not doing drugs and having orgies. Like
they're lost.
You know what they do? What they do? They push trout season up a month.
I did not expect you to say that.
You know? Yeah. They do stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
crazy stuff.
Oh, crazy, man. Crazy stuff.
You know what?
I'm we not going to wait. Conserve this fishery.
I'm going to fish for trout now, bitch.
It's a good movie. It's a classic,
yeah.
Apparently. It's really sad. It's really goddamn sad because the whole movie is basically just, you know,
do they die?
Scenes of people like knowing that they're all going to die, like trying to be happy or find some hope in their last few moments, and other people who have no hope saying, why do you have hope? There is no hope, and blah, 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 you know? A lot of conversations like that. Uh-huh. It's intense. It's good. That's what I watched this week.
Cool.
That was a great one to end on.
So I
finished... End of the world sadness.
I finished Alif the Unseen, which I talked about last week. I like Josh's stars method, so I think I'm going to use stars for books, too. So I'm going to give that one 4 stars. That's good. And I picked up Memory of Light, which is the final, the last Wheel of Time book.
Oh, yes.
Which I have been reading.
I saw you reading that, yeah. Did you actually not move for, like, 3 days?
I got through 200 pages in day one, so.
This is the one written by Sanderson?
Yes. This is the last of
Wait,
the
no, Sanderson wrote three?
Sanderson wrote the final three books in
final
the series.
Final three.
Yeah.
That's because.
Of 14. And they're all like 1,000 pages.
And that's because Jordan
Robert
died?
Jordan, yeah.
Right, okay.
But he knew he was going to die, and he wrote notes for all the last few, and he.
So like.
Did he even choose Brandon Sanderson?
Yes. All those things.
Isn't that crazy? Crazy
like he
pants,
knew, like
right?
He was
diagnosed
thinking,
right
yes.
with a terminal disease, and so he read a bunch of like instead of writing books himself, he stopped writing books. Right, this is an interesting way to do it. Instead of trying to like rush him out by the end, he stopped writing books and he started reading a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And he read like a million different
authors.
And... Thank you. God, I can't think of words.
Writer
today.
People.
What's the deal?
Those guys.
Who write the words
the typewriters
on the book pages.
Storytellers.
Yeah. So he read a lot. Identified like, okay, this is the guy. Approached him. Maybe approached others. That'd be weird. I don't actually know exactly how this story worked, but got hooked up with Brandon Sanderson somehow. And he said, yes, I will write. And then they went into seclusion and like mapped out the whole rest of the plot line and said like, okay, here's the handoff. And I will say this, Brandon Sanderson wrote 3 books way faster than Robert Jordan ever wrote books. Cause I've literally been reading this series since middle school.
And are his like, books good or
finally,
better
yeah,
than Jordan's?
Right in. They feel exactly.
Wow. He even writes like Jordan, you'd say, or is it, you can tell
I mean, you can definitely see that. I mean, they picked him for a reason, and I'm sure that Sanderson's also making an effort to make them feel like they belong in the series, but they totally do, and it's, yeah, it just reads through. I read one of, like, Frank Herbert's son's Dune books, mm-hmm. and it did not feel seamless like that at all. So, I don't know.
So you finished the last one?
No, that's what I picked up. I finished Elite the Unseen. Yeah.
That's right, okay.
Yeah. But, right. it's good.
Nice.
It's good. I got, like, 800 pages to go.
All right.
And then I will know what happens. I'll know if the world and all of creation is saved or not.
Everything's on the line, apparently.
Totally.
Nice.
Yeah.
Was everything on the line repeatedly, though, for, like, a bunch of books?
You know, the wheel of time turns and ages come and past. What has been will be again. So we're gonna find out.
Nice paraphrase quote. Yeah,
that's how it goes.
Nice.
David Byrne and Saint Vincent. This is one of those collabo bands where, like, two bands
collabo
get together.
Band.
Two bands like get together that. And
super
make.
Group?
No, it's not a super group.
Oh, because it's only two people.
No.
How many do you need to have a be a super group? Three.
No, but you're a super group is members of other bands that all get together and create a band.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, a member of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young and Tom Petty and you know.
But aren't they each their own band?
No, those I'm saying two different bands joined together and made, like, two bands of multiple people joined together to make another different band. Iron and Wine famously did this with, I don't know, some other, like, folky whatever. There's, like... It's confusing because Iron and Wine has an and in their name,
yeah.
But it's like this band and Iron and Wine
right.
made this other band and then released an album. So this is one of those. It's not
Tequila
quite a super group. There's a little difference. Anyway, there's a song called I Should Watch TV. I don't really know how to describe this other than it's really interesting music. It's not super melodic. It's just fun to listen to. I recommend people check it out. It's just like weird kind of horn-driven... it makes you feel a little edgy watching it.
But not listening to it.
Listening to it. I mean, the one I saw was a video of it, but it's good. It's kind of it's not rock and roll. It feels like electronic music, but performed entirely acoustically. So it's like a drummer and a horn section, whatever. But it kind of feels like weird, you know, edgy. Funky electronic music.
This is why listening to music is easier than describing it.
It's hard to describe it.
You can say what's in the music, but it doesn't really say anything.
Yeah. Definitely worth, you know, spending 3 minutes checking it out. I Should Watch TV by David Byrne and Saint Vincent.
Sounds cool.
Yeah.
I forgot. I had to mention music real quick. I don't know if we talked about it last week. Did we say that the Chrono Jigga?
Yeah,
yes. I linked you guys that, and that shit is tight.
Okay, so
oh man,
so I don't know if we talked about it last week, except just mentioned its existence. But I listened to it all the way through once, and the Chrono Trigger stuff is great. The production of Chrono Trigger beats. Okay, this is a
mashup
of basically all Jay-Z lyrics on top of. I think mostly original beats and samples, that are mostly sampling Chrono Trigger soundtrack, which is a 90s
Yasunori
Super
Mitsuda
Nintendo
original composer.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. One of the best of all time.
And it's a great soundtrack, the original Chrono Trigger soundtrack, but it's, you know, made with the SNES, whatever you call that processor.
Chiptune.
Exactly. And so it uses all those melodies and chiptunes and then, like, hip-hopifies them. And so the production's good, those beats are good, the melodies and the tweaked melodies, because he changes the melody sometimes, are really good. I really like it. And then the lyrics flow over the top, and it works pretty well. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
But my problem with it is that Jay-Z is kind of dumb. Like, his lyrics are really stupid.
Jay-Z's not a good rapper.
They fall into the...
He's more of an MC producer.
They fall into the classic, like, the only things that most of rap is ever about. Yeah. I'm hard, and I fuck bitches.
I'm on a boat.
Like, like the
bling.
He literally, he just constantly talks about how awesome he is.
Yeah.
Or about all the girls that he bangs, or about... Yeah, about having like
these rims are 22 inches in diameter.
He's just ripping on women.
22.
He's just ripping on women constantly and saying, "I'm fucking awesome. I'm fucking awesome. Women suck shit." Like I cannot enjoy it.
I know.
If it had no lyrics or if the lyrics were unintelligible or not in English, I might give it a 4 or 5. But they're in English and they're painful, so it's like a 2.
Yep.
Like, it's, I don't know how you like it. Like, listen to better rap. Listen to the Macklemore and Lewis, the Heist album.
Yeah.
It's so good. Out of the first 8 tracks, like, 7 of them are fucking brilliant and are really good lyrics and are really interesting. He's saying thought-provoking things while also having flow, while also having cool beats behind him, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck
and there's
Jay-Z,
a million,
man.
There's a
Fuck
million
Jay-Z.
Other like you know socially conscious rappers that are also very very good.
Yeah,
yeah.
Jay-Z is just like
you know,
super successful and emblematic of the genre. His bad side.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. He's just really he's good in his niche, which is not necessarily a preferred niche of mine. And yeah, I wasn't listening to it to really get into his lyrics. They are exactly what you say, but everything else you said made it. Worth yeah. listening to because it was done really like it's amazing how well the Chrono Trigger soundtrack works in that context.
It works even, really well. Yeah, so. It's cool.
Even like Eminem and Kanye are both kind of more interesting and say more thought-provoking things.
Yeah,
they also you know slip over into that side of you know look at how awesome I am you know stuff. But
I had no idea because I never listened to almost any of them. You know, yeah. Or, like I've heard some Eminem and I've yeah. heard a little bit of Kanye, but I've never really listened to much Jay-Z. I know people that are big Jay-Z fans, and yeah. all of a sudden I lost all respect for them on my first listen through of like 10 songs yeah. of Jay-Z rapping.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it is what it is. Yep.
Anyway, honest recommendation. Seriously, listen to Macklemore, The Heist. Like yep. the album is really good. You'll like it a lot.
Maybe I've already listened to it.
You yeah. haven't, because you didn't just say you did.
Maybe I don't need to say it. Maybe it's so obvious I've seen it, I don't need to say it. I actually haven't. I've just listened to the 2 songs that have videos. The
And those are good.
What if I,
Thrift Shop and the one about homosexuality. That's
they're
really
like
good.
10 songs that have videos, and they're all excellent.
Oh.
Go watch.
Those are
go
the ones
watch,
that I've seen linked.
Listen to the ones that I recommend on the show.
I just don't really think to listen to that kind of music very often.
When
so
I
doesn't
when I watch YouTubes, I don't put them in the same category in general of just like listening to albums. Like I recommend like listening to the album in your car or whatever whenever you listen to music, you know, independent mm-hmm. from just the videos too. Because the videos are so compelling, you're almost not really paying attention to the music enough as
True
if
enough.
You were listening to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other Side and Flight, if you want to have just 2 more instead of listening to the whole album. Those are both also very good.
Cool.
Yeah. So can we move? I got like a crossover media and games thing.
Yeah.
Is that a good segue?
Start it off.
Segue into games?
Let's segue.
Okay.
Segue us.
We just like ruined the usefulness of that segue by interrupting and questioning whether we should. Though.
Segue ahead.
Well, I didn't want to cut off any more media stuff.
Segue!
Pure media. All right. I'm going. Segue. Oh, man.
Longest segue ever.
We were downtown and Charlie saw... an actual segue for the first time.
Oh shit.
And he was yeah. like, oh shit, what's that? Like in effect. He did not say oh shit, but it was like he was with his cousin Bronwyn and we saw like one of those like
which is an awesome name by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. That name is hard. She's hard.
That is a hard name. She is gonna grow up to be a Greek goddess of some
Dude,
sort.
Dude, her dad is a Zimbabwean rugby player.
Right.
And her name is Bronwyn. When my cousin told me that she was naming her son Bronwyn, or her daughter Bronwyn, I was like, I now have to name my child like Thor if I want to have a harder name than that, because that's pretty badass.
She's a pretty badass
yeah.
girl, too.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so they were downtown and they saw, you know, one of those tour groups where it's like tour the city on mm-hmm. the Segway guided tour thing. So like, if I, you know, 10 people go by on Segways with helmets on and they're both like, what is that? Like, he just, it was cool. StarCraft II, Heart of the Swarm, came out.
That's true.
It did.
That game is all new and all different and really fun. All the multiplayer stuff that's happening. All the tournaments have all switched over. So there's one really good game that I will link as part of the show notes that John actually recommended between a player called Flash and a player called Life. Life actually just won MLG, the most recent MLG. But they introduced this one feature which is very cool. So StarCraft has always had a replay file. Many competitive games like League of Legends and a bunch of the other kind of anything that involves like clicking. I don't think FPSs really do this, but kind of map-oriented RTSs and what do they call them? MOBAs? Multiplayer online battle arenas.
Right.
Yeah. MOBAs do this as well. Yeah. They have a replay file, which is just like a record of all the clicks that you did during the game. That can literally, so it's just a few K of text, but it can literally just replay an entire game. It doesn't have to be a video recording.
Oh, wow.
Right. That's, so you can share.
That. That's cool.
Yeah. You can share a whole game as this little text file, which is like you typed these things and hit these keys and did these clicks at this positional coordinate, mouse coordinate, and the opponent did these, and you play that back, and it's the whole game.
It's like chess.
Yeah. It's cool.
Huh. Yeah. Lots of games have the potential to do that. I think one, some Forza or some racing game did that once.
That's cool.
You could save your replays, and as long as the physics weren't random enough, they would mostly be pretty accurate.
Yeah. So anyway, StarCraft has always had this, and they just introduced a feature with this expansion that allows you to take control of the replay and start playing the game again from any point.
Oh, and they post it publicly, and as a player, you can just grab those.
Yes. Yeah. So.
Wow.
So a pro player can post their replays, which they often do, right? They have like their, you know, whoever, you know, White Raw released a 10 game replay pack and people can check them out, and
but then,
casters can get them and play them. But here's what they did.
But
they did this in a tournament. They played these two really pro players played a show match, which is like a match for no money, but that is, you know, televised and cast, and, you know, like a special thing, like an exhibition match in that between two soccer teams or something, right? So they do this show match and they play the whole game, which turned out to be an awesome, excellent game. And then the winner and loser were decided. They came out and they both did an interview, like a 10-minute interview about the game, what was going on throughout the game, and where they thought they won or lost. And the player who lost then got to choose the point at which he thought he lost and start playing the game again from that point, and then play it out again from, which is such a cool idea. And I love that it's possible.
Was he then able to win?
I don't want to spoil it.
Ah.
But they are both excellent games.
Wow.
The first one.
Yeah, it's essentially like playing a new game. Except not from scratch, just from the middle or something.
From
like
some
like playing a scenario.
But it's such a cool idea to, like, because having
be
a replay,
able to rewind. You can't do that in other sports. If you think of it as a sport, it's basically, I mean, you could theoretically do that in football or something. It's like, let's go back to the third quarter.
Let's pick it up from the third quarter.
Pretend.
Right. Yeah.
Except you'd be like, you would be in a different physical readiness state, so it wouldn't be exactly the same.
So in order to do that, though, in order to have both guys on board, like, did they already agree the first guy won and gave him the whole award?
It wasn't.
Or did they plan to do the replay and say that, you know, whoever wins the rematch thing also gets another award, or so they just did it purely for fun?
They were probably both paid some money to participate in the show match, and it was part of another tournament. So it was like, Heart of the Swarm is coming out. Let's check out this cool new feature. And they turned out to both be awesome games in their own right. But it was also, it's just fucking cool that you can do
that's
that.
Very
it's
cool, very, man.
And something
sure.
that can
like
only
that.
Happen in esports. So yeah, it's pretty rad.
That's rad.
Yeah. As far as other games, I just played more Tomb Raider. That game's good. Oh, that game's fucking interminable. Okay, hold on.
Whoa.
That game's really good.
Interminably good?
But there are some stretches which are ultra combat focused. It's like you just come across this thing and you're like, this is just a battle arena, and then you have to fight your way through wave after wave of dudes, and it gets really boring. So that's,
is that because the combat is not interesting, or just you don't want to do that in a Tomb Raider game?
The combat's pretty good. The shooting is pretty good. It feels pretty good, but it just, there, I'm at a scene that literally took me, might have taken me like 40 minutes and 6 tries to beat or something like that, because it's a really long combat stretch. There's not really checkpointing. Like, there's a checkpoint at the beginning, you have to make it all the way through, and I just kept dying, and I eventually found a strategy that allowed me to get through it. And those, there have been basically two of those so far, and I'm like, I don't know, 60% of the way through, and that part of it's really, really dumb.
Let me put this in a little more context. I just explained to my mom what the new Tomb Raider game is, because I got the first Tomb Raider on PlayStation 1. It was my console selling, you know, game. I got it on Christmas.
It wasn't Final Fantasy VII?
That wasn't out yet. We bought, you know, we planned to buy the PlayStation 1 because Final Fantasy VII was promised to come out on that system later that year or whatever. Oh. But I got it, you know, at Christmas when in 1999 or 98 or something before Final Fantasy VII came out. So it was the one that I saw in Russ's EGM and was like, oh, that's the game. I should get the console
EGM since
Final Fantasy is coming to it, right?
EGM RIP.
So I played Tomb Raider 1 with like family watching because it was so cinematic, mm-hmm. right? It had an opening CG cutscene, and then you're like climbing through caves and like tigers occasionally jump out and you get scared, you know? And it's like an Indiana Jones, you know?
Yeah.
And
that game was rad.
It was
like a less confrontational Indiana Jones with less violence.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Nazis.
So I've played every Tomb Raider since, and my family has occasionally seen or gotten updates on the iteration, you know, the interim ones or whatever. And they've all been slow iterations until this one. This one's a reboot. And what happened was, you know, they all sold okay, but not fabulously. And then Uncharted completely copied the exact, like, Tomb Raider formula bottom to top, except modified it for a larger audience. They added more combat. Instead of, like, 80% exploration, 10% cheesy-ass story, 10% dumbass combat, they went 30% like high budget cutscenes with like good acting and animation and mocap, 30% like easy ass jumping exploration, and 30% like traditional shooting and combat,
third person
and like Gears of War, like cover based but a little more casual, and so it's like 30-30-30 combat, jumping, and cutscenes or whatever, and that just resonated and sold gangbusters. And so they made three of them that all sold better than like any Tomb Raider ever, I think, kind of assuming. But so the latest Tomb Raider said, we need to learn our lesson back again, and they basically emulated all the Uncharted things and, you know, rebooted Tomb Raider to have fucking 30% combat and a lot better cutscenes that are still a little bit cheesy or whatever. And so there's just this shit ton, and they took a lesson maybe from Walking Dead or something recent and said, how do we get even more like emotional and visceral than Uncharted? I know, we'll make it way fucking rated more M. We'll have like way more gore and and make it way more brutal. And it is, it's really brutal. Because my mom sees me play an early scene in the game, and I'm like, hey, remember Tomb Raider? She's like, yes, you know. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I am murdering all these fools. Like, this is the murder fools for several minutes section.
You came until, in at the wrong time.
Until I get back to the cool jumping, exploring part and puzzles.
Just sit tight while I murder people.
Yeah. Oh. I had to apologize for it. It was a little bit weird.
Embarrassing,
you know? Because it is. It's like, I kind of liked the games a little bit better when they were more just about exploring. And I mean, I like the intensity of the, you know, like cave-ins and running away from dudes and the cinematic quick time event stuff. But there is just a lot, way too much casual, like, murdering dudes.
Yeah, and there's a couple, like, stealth sections that are good, tense, you know, don't feel out of place. There's some cool puzzling sections. There's some really cool traversal. And then there is combat. And I think that, you know, gun combat has a place in video games. It's not all terrible. It's just there's two sections in particular that stand out as being really bad. And there's probably 10%, you know, if combat is 30%, it could have been 20% and the game would have been much better for it. And it would have felt, they could have made the combat feel sparse, but really impactful when it happened. And instead it's, you know, just over the line into too often. And there's a couple kind of bad level design sections where it's just like not enough checkpointing, you know, too hard, you know, yeah. Enemy AI problems and whatever.
It's a great game though.
Really great game.
So even with those weaknesses,
I still want to play it. I still want to go home and play it. I'm mad I haven't been able to finish it. You know?
That's cool.
Other games?
Is that all you've been playing?
Yeah.
Basically? Okay, yeah.
We could talk about the game that we just played right before the show.
I will bring that up. What about you, Josh? You got anything you've been playing?
A little bit in the interim. I haven't had time to play a bunch of Tomb Raider yet. I lost some of my save progress to a Steam Cloud issue.
Really?
Yeah, it was kind of.
Have you ever had that happen before? I've never had a.
I have periodic Steam Cloud issues because if you like don't close the game the right way, or if you just, I don't know, get unlucky to the gods of Steam, when you launch a game, it will occasionally say, hey, could not sync your cloud save. Are you sure you still want to launch this game?
Mm.
And if you ever say yes, it's like a mistake. You should always say no and like try do again. Something. Reboot, yeah. Like make sure your internet is good. Because launch the game again and make sure you actually get your cloud save working. Because if you ever save local progress that doesn't get to the cloud, then you might get the cloud one out of sync and then accidentally download the old-ass cloud one and overwrite your local one. It's blah, blah, blah. Anyway.
Yeah, it's the classic problem of merging two databases at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was also complex because I logged in on another system and then came back. Anyway. I've been playing a lot more Crokinole. Fucking love it. We got to play some more. It's great. They sent me some more free pieces. I also got the little rubber screw set. Oh, yeah. I don't know if I'm going to put it in, though.
Hmm.
There's a Android Kickstarter game that just came out for free called Pixel Kingdom. And it's like Plants vs. Zombies with three lanes, where your dudes aren't static, they move across the screen in the opposite direction, like a tug of war.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to press the enemy to get to their side. It's also like Cartoon Wars, which is another one, except that was only one lane, and that screen was really long. You had to scroll sideways. This is one screen, no scrolling. Your dudes come from the left, their dudes come from the right. You spawn new dude types, you get more mana. It's really simple, but really fun. I like it a lot. For some reason, it seems to completely be missing sound. I don't know how they launched the game with absolutely no sound, or if it's a weird fluke on my system, but I love that game, and I don't really mind it doesn't have sound, because I usually play phone games muted. And for some reason, I felt compelled to reinstall the Old Republic, because it went free to play. Mm-hmm. And they periodically send me emails that say, hey, you should play, and here's new features.
Dear God, please play.
And this is like, you know, crazy bonus XP weekend, and here's all the new features. And, you know, if you're a returning subscriber, then you get this kind of bullshit. And I was always like, yeah, I kind of wanted to try another story in that game, because there's so many fucking stories. It's like 10 Mass Effect games in one. And I want to play the Jennifer Hale-voiced character, which is the female trooper.
Mm-hmm.
For the Republic. And so I started a female trooper, Jennifer Hale, badass, playing like all dark side decisions. And I really like it, and the game hasn't changed much. It's a little less buggy and it's a little cleaner, and the graphics are actually a little nicer and smoother. But I think it's going to slow down. I think they penalize you for being a free-to-play player, and you get slower XP later, and I'll probably burn out on it after a little while. But for now, it's cool.
Do you even play Guild Wars 2 anymore? I haven't heard you talk about that in a long time.
I haven't logged into it in a while.
Why'd you stop playing? Because I thought that was, you know, one of your favorite MMO
it's good.
Type games.
It's good, but it's, it doesn't have a compelling story.
Mm.
And I was recently craving compelling stories, which is why I've been watching a lot of movies, not playing anything.
Yeah.
Or reading books or whatever, you know? When I just get that urge, I switch, just, you know, I wasn't paying a subscription, so I felt no like monetary compulsion to get to it immediately. I could always wait and go back to it.
Right.
And, people that I knew that were playing aren't, you know, stop playing. So, you know, I could always jump in PvP. But I kind of wanted them to add more maps, so I was going to wait till they add more maps and then go back. And the questing level grind to the cap or whatever, there's a lot of cool areas, and you get to see more stuff and do more things, but it's a little bit samey.
Mm-hmm.
you know? I'll go back to it at some point, see what they add. They do a lot of holiday event stuff. I logged in once or twice to see whatever their weird holiday event shit was going on. Mm-hmm. They add some stuff, you know? It's a good game.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. That's it? Game-wise? No time with all the movies?
Oh. I had to mention real briefly Knit Underground. I talked about this before, and I still never beat it because I got like 60-70% of the map uncovered, and then
so 1,000 screens in.
Yeah, it's a really long game, and I just put it down and played other things, like I do for a lot of really great games that I love. Right, I just haven't gotten back to it yet. Well, I got Justin into it because it went on sale or something, and I wasn't sure if you know anybody I knew was going to like it except me. You guys weren't super intrigued. Justin somehow got crazy intrigued, and he now basically, he beat it. He played the shit out of it for the last 2 weeks, and he loves the shit out of that game. He thinks it's on par with Fez, and after he got further than I did, like, he started telling me about some of the shit later in the game. I tried to avoid some spoilers, but he really wanted to tell me some things. Like, it gets batshit in terms of, like, how hard some of the crazy hidden, like, deep message, take notes, like, find stuff here, you know? Like, that game is long and deep. He says it's a lot longer than Fez as far as just completion.
Yeah.
But it also has a lot of the crazy depth of Fez. He puts them, like, in the exact same category. Wow. He liked them both, and he liked doing all the weird puzzles in Fez. It's not the same kind of puzzles, but it is a similar, like, level of all this crazy hidden shit that you might have to... He recommends finding a guide and just following a guide so you don't waste your time. Because, you know, he was really, really trying to, like, 100% the upper right corner, you know, quadrant or whatever. And he had these, like, open spaces that he knew he had to get in there somewhere. He was just like, how do I get in there? And the whole game is, like, ring these bells. And, like, you try to get to the first bell, and you can't get there, and then you try to get to another bell, and you can't get there, and you're just like, fuck, how do I ring any of these bells? I thought this was just going to be a progression game, right?
Yeah.
Without, like, cheating or whatever. Well, he eventually gave up, found a guide, and went, Jesus Christ, this game is so hardcore, like, I just recommend following a guide for the whole thing. Like, I didn't know it got that deep and hard and cool.
Yeah, that's...
So now I'm kind of excited to go back to it.
That's neat.
Which I was going to anyway, but I really recommend it further to you guys. He agreed that he actually thought the art style, the background of some of those images are like low res and dumb looking.
Mm-hmm.
But once he realized like the depth of the game and how, you know, how the variety of the different areas and how big it is and how that's really just like an efficiency. I think that it was a good balance struck of like cool art for relatively efficient.
Penalty input. For your, like, I don't want this game to be 12 gigs or something.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Nice. So yeah, that's it.
Yeah, speaking of Niflis, I actually did start a game of Within a Deep Forest.
Cool.
Which I had never actually played before. I just watched you play, so I got a couple of the balls in that, and that's fun. That's a very interesting... You know, he's very good at just making good moods. He makes a game that once you start playing, no matter how simplistic it is, or even if you like don't get very far in it, it's just fun to kind of be in it.
Yeah.
And the music and the sound design and the graphics are just inviting.
I've always really liked being in his worlds, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of his games, you know, kind of feel like they're built from a similar foundation, graphic-wise and gameplay-wise. You can tell he's kind of like, he's got a specific design aesthetic that he uses through his games, which makes them all feel cohesive, which is really cool, which leads me into this guy I want to talk about, but I just want to mention two things before that. Speaking of Fez, I just saw the news, like, this weekend, I guess, that it's coming to Steam on May 1st,
yeah.
Which I knew that was probably going to happen, but I didn't realize it was going to happen so soon. I thought that would be, like, years from now, but... Yeah, so anybody who doesn't have an Xbox can finally play that game. And
makes sense.
You definitely should. I even thought for half a second that I might buy it again just to play again, but I don't know.
It's tempting for your games like that just to like at least support them to buy it, even if you're not sure if you're ever going to play it again.
Yeah, or just to have it on a more portable,
more permanent
system than my Xbox, which feels like it's in the cloud. Really,
I'm still crossing all my fingers that like all of my Xbox games are going to transfer to the new Xbox.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. This one's like a PowerPC architecture, right? So
yeah,
I'm not sure it's all easily portable.
Feels like Microsoft has enough virtualization shops that they should be able to they should be able to just run that shit.
Well, and, like, sort of like the PS4 is going to run. Well, maybe we'll run all the old PS1 through 3 games.
There's that's never going to happen. That was a pie in the sky. Like,
you really think that's just total
10-year promise,
smoke up the ass kind of thing? Okay.
Well there are
systems, it still seems doable though,
that are not emulatable. Like, there's still no Saturn emulator that's actually functional. Because
no one has tried to make one?
No, people have tried. It's like just too hard. There's this one. Apparently, there's some crazy shit about like. There was a chip that was like the sound processing chip. They figured out how to essentially run like floating point on the sound chip and get like vector output from it and use that to like boost the horsepower of the regular processor and like eke more graphic performance out of it. And there's a bunch of games that did that. This like weird hardware trick. And it's like super hard to emulate two separate physical processors and like virtualize both of them, but then have them be in sync if they're actually really running their operations on the same chip, which is your desktop processor. So they have to do like multi-threading, like you have to have separate processor cores, and there's like all kinds of crazy shit.
Yeah, it sounds like
it's probably not unsolvable, but it's like you need like hardware engineers.
Yeah, it sounds like they need the original devs to help them make that emulator, which will probably never happen.
So the PlayStation 1, obviously, that could get emulated pretty decently. The PlayStation 2?
Oh, yeah, I've already used one.
Maybe. But PlayStation 3, who the fuck knows, right?
Yeah.
If they, that processor is crazy, right? So if Sony were ever going to theoretically like serve you PlayStation 3 games in the cloud... they might have to have server banks of physical PS3s to do
cell
that.
Cell processors, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which they might not find feasible, you know, financially.
Didn't it have like 9 cores or something? Like we have.
I think it's 8.
13 and a half cores in this.
Maybe 9. Yeah, like, I don't know.
It's the cell processor. Your refrigerator will have one soon.
It's kind of crazy. Yeah. So who knows if they'll ever find that viable? I don't think that's realistic. Like, they have proven that PS1 and PSP are doable on like the Vita and the PS3 and stuff.
Yeah.
But, and then maybe a few years from now or whatever, the PS2 games, but I don't know. I don't have my fingers crossed
but
for PS3.
PSN,
I don't believe it's going
to
happen.
PSN games and XBLA games, we have more hope for.
More hope, but who knows?
Yeah. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Do the right thing, guys.
Let's hope.
I know you're listening.
I just downloaded a fun little iOS game called Super Stickman Golf 2 from Noodle Cake Studios, which is a great company name and logo. So I had actually played the first one like a week ago because it was free, and it's kind of fun. It's like a mini golf game, except instead of overhead, it's, you know, from the side perspective.
I was thinking it looks like Worms or something.
Yeah, I guess so. It's kind of like one player hit the enemy, which is the hole that you're trying to put the ball in.
Okay.
Kind of a thing. Yeah, it's like a crazy course that you're trying to, you know, it's golf. It's mini golf, basically. But it's pretty fun. And it's got a chiptune soundtrack by this guy that I've mentioned before on the show, Whitaker Trebella. He's a musician who also became a programmer and made the game Polymer, which is really cool. Really cool puzzle game. So I follow him on Twitter, and he is just taking over the iOS, like, composition spot. Like, he had like 3 games come out last week that all had his music in it. He's just like the go-to guy, and everybody who gets him to do their music like constantly tweets about how they love his stuff and you should use him. And so that guy, he knows what he's doing.
What's the other Noodle Cake game?
Super Stickman Golf 1.
No, I
sounds
have
familiar.
I have a game that's a Noodle Cake game, but I can't think of what it is.
Yeah, I see that logo.
I see that logo
here in there,
but I don't know. I'm looking through my games right now. I don't know which one it would be. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah, you could just look it up on the App Store and developer info. Anyway, so that's cool. But as I was mentioning before, much like Niflis, this guy his name's Alexander Martin, but he goes by Droken, Droqen, and then .com is his website. Jonathan Blow,
maker of Braid and the forthcoming, soon to come out, The Witness game. I also follow him on Twitter. And recently, he has been like freaking talking the shit out of this game called Starseed Pilgrim, made by this Alexander Martin guy. So, you know, I don't always download every game that a developer talks about, but he just, he basically went on to say that, like, if you don't play this game, you know, you're an idiot in the way that he does. And like, if the people talking about Game of the Year are talking about any other game but this game, they're, like, they're super wrong. So I was like, wow, you know, this is probably at least worth checking out since Braid is so great. And so there was actually an interview with this guy, Alexander Martin, and he had a very interesting quote about his game design philosophy that I'm going to read real quick. He says, "One of the unique things a game can do is, more than teach, to allow you to learn and discover for yourself. There are several approaches to making this happen, and many games get around having a tutorial by carefully crafting the first few levels to make learning the things they want you to learn unavoidable, and slowly I am realizing this approach is not for me. I want to present you with a world that's consistent in its own very interesting way and set you loose in it. I want to bury secrets in the sand so that when you find them, it is you who's finding them and being amazed by them, not my invisible, omnipresent game designer's hand. I'm not interested in being a helicopter parent because I believe true accomplishment is something immeasurably rewarding, and I wouldn't put that at risk for anything. Of course, I understand at what cost this comes. If you make a game that provides minimal guidance through its abstract rules, players will get lost and never find their way again." So I went to his website and I played pretty much every single game he has. He has about a dozen that are free, and then there's a pack called Probability Zero and Friends, which comes with Probability Zero, which is this interesting little roguelike game that he wrote.
He made that, the same guy?
Yeah, he made all these games.
Oh, okay.
He's just a lot of these came from game jams. Like, he made them in a weekend or a week with a friend or nobody. And Starseed Pilgrim is one of those games that
so
he's
out
made.
Of all those random things that you tried, mm-hmm. like, how many of those are rewarding or worth trying? Or
these are the ones that I would recommend playing. Out of the about 20, maybe less than 20 games he put up there, I found 7 that I would recommend. 100th is a simple puzzle game where you use a balloon to traverse around a cave. You can either grab onto the balloon and it will carry you up, or you can actually jump on the balloon and it will carry you up. And there are certain tiles that you cannot go through, but the balloon can. So you want to, like, drag the balloon over to somewhere and let it go, and let it go through that tile you can't, and then follow it up and jump on it to have it, you know, lift you higher, and then jump off it again so it goes somewhere else. And if it pops, there are guys that give you a replacement balloon, and, you know, you use that to get through the level. It's a very, you know, he has a lot of very simple mechanics that are just fun little games to play. DWOC, D-I-W-O-C, is a very simple color-changing gravity puzzle where, you know, when you're not holding a control and you're moving, you see one version of the screen, and when you press up, gravity switches and the whole level changes, the layout and where everything is different, but only when you're holding up and the gravity is different. So you have to switch back and forth between gravities and screens to, like, get over pits and dodge spikes and stuff like that. Pretty neat. Dry Voices is a basic game where you play a guy and you jump around and you try to escape a cave that's procedurally and randomly generated. Break Entry is this really interesting game where there's a sphere and it has different levels, and there are little spheres that move around inside of that, and your whole interaction with the game is typing commands like you're at a console, and you type things like dive, which moves your sphere down one level, but you have to avoid hitting the other spheres, and you can hit exit to go back up a level. Mm-hmm. And when you get to the most innermost level that you can, because they get uncovered progressively, you type another command that does a break, which makes a circle that you have to then, like, basically jump into, which opens up the next inside ring, and then the next one, and the next one, and it keeps getting smaller and smaller and more enemies, and it's harder to dodge them, and if you get hit by any of them, it closes that level and sends you back up to the top. So you have to, like, risk-reward, you know, jump in and out of levels, but all through commands, not, like, pressing up or down or moving a controller.
Does it tell you what to type for?
Yeah, it has all the commands, and there are short versions of the commands, like DV for dive and X for exit, so you can just type those really quick, like you were trying to hack some kind of machine, and this is the gameplay mechanic. I don't know. I thought that was really interesting, and he probably made that in a day or a weekend or something. In the pack that actually costs money, $10 for four games, one of them is called Banefish, which is basically like the balloon one, except you have a harpoon instead that you can throw against a wall and you can jump on the harpoon, or you can throw it and jump on it as it's riding to get across pits, and it's another kind of simple puzzle game.
And Bane from Batman is in it?
There's no Bane, no. You're like a little underwater diver.
Now you have my permission diver. To die, fish.
You're like a little underwater diver guy. I don't know why he calls it that.
This will be Gotham's reckoning.
I mentioned Probability Zero. That's a kind of a roguelike infinite runner where you're just kind of descending in a cave and you can punch enemies to get points and you can break cubes and you can shoot stars. And when you reach a little line, every once in a while you stop there and you can choose from a power-up, like being able to shoot stars to the side or up, or your punch does more damage, kind of simple stuff like that. And all of this stuff has, you know, interesting music, especially that one. And then, of course, there's Starseed Pilgrim, which you guys actually played and might actually have something to say. I don't know. I've talked a lot about this guy. I like his design aesthetic. I like his philosophy. You know, most of these games are very simple. They don't give you a lot of instructions. It's very much about just like, here's my neat little thing. Most of them are in Flash, so it's easily playable cross-platform. Figure it out. Like, see what you can do. And Starseed Pilgrim, I feel, is like the zenith of his philosophy where... Like, you know, I'm not really sure what you're supposed to do in that game. You're supposed to figure it out. What did you guys think of it?
So I thought that, well, as you're reading that quote, I was just thinking about the one experience that I have with him, which is Starseed Pilgrim, and it definitely makes sense that the person who wrote that quote or said it, you know, made that game.
Yeah,
that totally makes sense. It's so it's a little, you know, it's the art is kind of pixel art style. There's some music that's kind of timed to or caused by the actions of the player in the game. It's not just playing in the background. And yeah, there's a grid of squares slowly being eaten away from beneath, and you can kind of drop things that cause more squares to appear, and there's some rules about how that happens, and you kind of figure them out as you play. You know, we played for probably 5 minutes and had one kind of major revelation right at the end, and that was, yeah, a cool moment that we discovered on our own, and it definitely seems interesting, and like there might be a lot more there, so I think it seems cool.
Do you think you would actually play it on your own again?
Yeah. I would play it. I don't know if I will buy that whole pack. But I guess it's $6 just for that and $10 for the pack, so you may as well just buy the $10. But...
yeah, because Probability Zero is pretty fun. Banefish is fun. There's also a 2-4-player game that I didn't show you called like Pirata or something like that, and it's just another very simple 2-4 players. Treasure falls from the top, and you try to get more points than the other person, and some of them are harmful, like bombs and barrels that you can push to, you know, blow up the other character while also trying to get, you know, treasure and stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, might be fun for like 10 minutes, you know, to play, yeah. But I don't know. I'm mixed about how I feel about Starseed Pilgrim, because Jonathan Blow was like blowing up Twitter about it. And I don't know if I would say, like, it's the best game of the year.
I think he played it anywhere near enough.
I think
enough,
that but based on his quotes and based on the designer's intent, it sounds like they are promising a lot more of a payoff in terms of complexity and depth and longevity, replayability in this than we can initially see is possible in 5 minutes. I don't think we can, you know, if we trust them, then I don't think we
can. There is a high degree of trust, isn't there?
I don't think we can fairly judge it in 5 minutes, right? I mean, a lot of games get around that, like, unknown by showing you trailers of crazy shit near the end. And, you know, I don't like spoilers, so I should just be willing to try this with, you know, no information except that, you know, somebody I really like... says it's really good, so it sounds promising enough that I'm tempted. I think I'm probably gonna just buy it for $6 and go play it and see how much I can figure out and see how far we get. Because it might be one of those fucking Frog Fractions or or Fez or Braid type games where, like, you know, after you figure something out, you learn that there's a whole new layer of depth, and then you get better, and it's, and you feel really good for figuring shit out and being smart. And yeah, I like those. So if there's potential for that, I'm gonna give it a try. I don't think we can fairly judge it yet until supposedly you need to somebody's first quote I googled real quick earlier was he played for more than an hour before he quote got it, you know, or mm-hmm. began to get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, so I'll give it an hour,
yeah,
or an hour and a half.
I actually had trouble running it initially because the way he wrote it on the Mac, you actually have to disable Gatekeeper because it's not signed in Mountain Lion. Okay, so it actually said, like, this app is damaged. You should put it in the trash. And I was like, what? You know, I just downloaded it. So I actually emailed.
Damaged? That's a funny word for unsigned.
I know. Usually you can just, like, control click and it will whitelist it. But this one, literally, I had to turn off Gatekeeper to even play it, which I figured out by emailing Alexander. And I say, hey,
you had to email him?
Yeah, I had a few emails back and forth with this guy, actually. Like, I can't play your games. I want to play your games. What the hell? And he's like, oh, you got to turn off Gatekeeper. I'm like, all right. So I did. And I told him my thoughts about some of his games that while I was playing them, and he responded back. And he's, you know, he's just a guy who makes games. I mean, he's not like a faceless company. You know? Yeah. And I told him, yeah, I don't really understand Starseed Pilgrim, but I'll keep trying it. And his response to that was, if you still have questions, you're not done playing.
Cool.
And I'm like, all right.
Up top, buddy.
So, good. I don't know. This guy seems like he's worth,
I like it,
giving $10 or even $6 to and playing his shit. Anyway, so yeah, he's cool. That's basically all the games I played. And
Red.
Nice. So do you want to do a couple grab bags?
Let's do one.
One grab bag. All right, someone roll.
Do we need to generate like 54s or something? Don't we have...
Yeah, a number between what and what? I could like roll three and add them together.
I think it's 1 and 18.
Between 1 and 18?
Okay, all right.
That's 18. One die.
Our D20 works.
It is. You can do that. Or you could roll three and add them up.
If we get a 19 or a 20, we're ending early.
All right.
All right.
All right. Here goes.
11.
Our favorite overlooked games.
Overlooked.
I would say Starseed Pilgrim right now, I guess, but I guess think of something else.
Oh, yeah, most of my favorites have become sleeper hits.
Yeah.
So this is maybe a little difficult. I like Super Crate Box. I've talked about that a lot.
Yeah.
I don't think that got, you know, a huge amount of praise. I like all the Knit Niflis games, which we've recently talked about a lot, that are not everyone's cup of tea.
There's nothing I can think of that I have that's overlooked. Maybe some of the Xbox Live indie games that I've played. There's one that's I actually don't even remember the name of it, but I'll link it. It's that twin stick shooter that's all it's all beat oriented. Do you remember that one? You fire a note.
There's
you
one fire... called Everyday Shooter.
No, this is an Xbox Live Arcade. Everyday Shooter is a...
That's PSN.
PSN. Yeah. No, this one, I made you guys play it once. It's a twin stick shooter where every time you fire is paced to the music beat of the song that's playing underneath. Quantized, yes. So as the time signature changes, as the, you know, BPM gets, you know, faster or slower, your rate of fire and then your weapons all are altered, and then all of the enemies move on the beat as well. That's a really cool one. I don't recall what it is, but
sounds familiar.
Yeah, I know that I made you play it. That one's pretty cool.
Forgot to mention, we also tried Bit Trip Runner 2 this week. That is really good. It's on XBLA free demo. You can play quite a few levels for free, and it is one of those forced running side scrolling platformers. But it's like, its graphics look cool and are varied, and it has like optional objectives and levels, and then it gets a bunch of like things besides jump eventually, like duck and kick and slide or swirl or stuff like that.
And the soundtrack is done by Disasterpiece.
Yeah, the music was awesome. Yeah, what Charles said reminded me that the music is really good, and the sound effects and music are all tied to everything happening in the game, the whole game. Every jump, every enemy, every coin you collect, every slide and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're all, like, the levels are choreographed to the music or vice versa. You know, they're tightly integrated.
Yeah, I can't think of anything, so I'll just pimp another game that I played that I forgot to talk about called The Silent Age. This was actually brought up by Dave last week. He mentioned it's a point-and-click Monkey Island adventure. Mm-hmm. So I played through the whole first episode that's out right now on iOS and it is free. They're trying to make the second one right now. They're not kickstarting it, but they are asking for donations on their website, so I kicked them a few bucks. It's really good. It's not very difficult. But once again, it's another great game where the mood, because of the graphic style and more importantly the sound design and the music, it really puts you in the place. And the storyline, what's happening in it, is actually really interesting. As he said, it does mention time travel, and that element is used maybe not revolutionarily, but well executed and is fun. So I would recommend playing that. And I don't think it's super popular.
I got one more. It's kind of like an underrated game, which is the precursor to Heavy Rain, which was Fahrenheit or Indigo Prophecy. That game was actually really effing intense. And, you know, a lot of people didn't like it or denigrated it or didn't get a lot of mainstream coverage because its primary interaction was just QuickTime events. And they were kind of bad QuickTime events. It was like a point-and-click adventure where all you do is walk around and occasionally like hit activate, and then the QuickTime events during the movie-ish cutscenes were like really dumb things on PC controls, like up and down, left and right. It was really ambitious. They were trying to do what Heavy Rain was eventually, you know, kind of executed more successfully, but... I still think it was really, really good. You know, if you're okay with pressing up and down, left and right, or whatever, for like intense quick time events, like the story did some really unique things. Really unique things, especially just the fucking intro.
Mm-hmm.
Intro was crazy. I don't know if I should. It was anyway.
Yeah,
and Heavy Rain was really good too, and it's pretty big budget and pretty well known, but I think it's phenomenal and underrated.
I've just thought of one. Which is the racing game Blur.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That
was awesome. I regret selling that to, like, GameStop or whatever when I did. That was fun.
That is a surprisingly fun and probably pretty overlooked. I mean, I think it had... Maybe it's one of those games where you play the demo and it's enough of the game where you don't really need to buy it at that point. It's kind of victim of that, you know, demos hurt game sales thing.
Yeah.
Was that bizarre?
Yeah, and published by Activision, basically just a really, really arcadey racing game with a ton of power-ups.
It was like a Surf's Mario Kart.
Yeah, exactly. It's Mario Kart with real car licenses.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. Just a lot of fun. Just, you know, bash around, blow stuff up. You have, you know, the equivalent of the turtle shell and the equivalent of the shield. And
now, did you see the leaked like videos and snippets of the game that they were making subsequent to Blur and Project Gotham?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, there's pretty rad like little video clips of cars driving up buildings and shit.
Oh, cool. Yeah,
it's really awesome. Yeah,
that's a good
disappointing
one.
That I think that's never happening because they dissolved.
It had really fun multiplayer and a pretty hardcore community of people who did a lot of multiplayer. Nice, like, you know, Call of Duty style leveling up perks thing.
Seeing progress bars go by.
It's probably the $4 in used game sales now.
The free open beta downloadable on Xbox was really thorough.
Yeah.
And so I kind of got my fill out of that.
Yeah, it was thorough.
I think it was one of those examples of too much given away.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, let's wrap this up early. This has been the Escort Mission. You should go to our website, escortmission.com, send us mail, check us out on the social medias, buy stuff through our Amazon link.
Buy a juicer.
Buy a juicer or anything else that Amazon sells through our link.
Or just eat vegetables.
That too. Yeah,
vegetables are good. Eat your veggies. Veggies and ASL. And that's it. Any parting thoughts, guys?
Good night.
No.
Hello.